The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
And it is the Seth Liefshin Show, guest hosted by Congressman John Campbell today. Seth will be back with you tomorrow. Welcome back, Arizona, as you're all sitting there get in traffic out there at 5 o'clock, a little after 5 o'clock. Get ready for a fast hour here. I got a whole bunch of topics left and not as much time as I planned on to get to them. So we're going to get to them. It's going to be the lightning round here, this third hour of the day. So let me get back to Governor Ducey's State of the State speech yesterday. And I let in something he said last time about licensing boards, but let's play cut number six.
These are programs we plan to build, expand, and align with the jobs of tomorrow. And my budget will do just that. If people want to work, let's let them work. 100,000 people will move here this year. There's a job available for every single one of them. Lots of them are trained and certified in other states. Standing in their way of earning a living in Arizona, our own licensing boards and their cronies who tell them, you can't work here. You haven't paid the piper. Let's stop this foolishness. Pass Warren Peterson's bill to grant universal recognition for all occupational licenses, and let them work.
Oh, amen to that. But boy, I tell you, he's going to run into opposition in the state bureaucracy for that. That's why these people have power. You want to cut hair? You need a license to cut hair. I give out those licenses, et cetera. I've seen these things in operation. And now he went on, he called them bullies on. I mean, this was Trump-esque almost in terms of the way he was fearless about this. He called them bullies on boards and he said, who would miss you if you were gone? And so he's really calling out a part of the government that way, which is dangerous. You've seen what's happened to President Trump when he does that. It means those people in those bureaucracies, they go after the governor or they go after the president in the case of Trump. But so that is a great idea. And again, it's a thing that's saying Arizona is a place that is open for business where you can come and you can work and you can earn a living. And the cost of things will not be raised by government bureaucracy. So that not only can you earn a living, but you can have a good lifestyle because not everything costs a ridiculous amount because it's the cost of it has been raised by bureaucracies. So that was a really good thing. I mean, I was amazed. And again, for those of you who may not have heard, I'm Congressman John Campbell. I was born and raised in California, went to school there, been married for 40 years to the captivating Mrs. Campbell. And I was in the California State Legislature for just short of 5 years and in Congress from California for just short of 10 years. But I'm a political refugee that from California that now lives in Arizona and just moved this last year to Arizona. For a whole bunch of reasons, and I'm very, very happy here and I've been coming here for a long time. My dad was born in Tucson, so it's not a strange place to me at all whatsoever. But point is some of these things he mentioned, I've been waiting. I was first elected to office in 2000 and I've been waiting since then, almost 19 years now, for some people to do some of these things. And Governor Ducey is proposing to do these. So another one of my really pet peeves that he hit on. Let's play cut number five.
Education and our economy go hand in hand. Many of us remember a class back when we were in high school called shop. It's where a lot of good people discovered a passion they turned into a purpose and then a pretty good paycheck. Our education leaders are creating the shop classes of the 21st century. It's called Career and Technical Education, CTE. Today, students in these programs are training to become nurses, pilots, pharmacists, bankers, firefighters, and software developers, all before graduation. In fact, 99% of CTE students graduate high school. 99%, a much higher rate than the national average. They perform better in mathematics and reading, and their technical skills rival professionals in the same trade. Just take a look at some of these programs. Aviation at Pima Community College. Advanced manufacturing at Maricopa Community Colleges. Diesel mechanics at the Western Maricopa Education Center. And culinary arts at the East Valley Institute of Technology. Today, we have more jobs available in the state of Arizona than we have people to fill them. Whatever and wherever the skilled trade is needed, Arizona is prepared to meet the demand.
Oh my gosh, folks, this is so needed. The left, amongst the miserable cultural things that they have built, is this idea that everyone must have a four-year education, a four-year college degree, and that if you don't, your worth as a person is determined by having a four-year college degree. That is so completely wrong, so completely not true. But I mean, you can see that, again, all bad ideas these days can be found in California, all of them. It's all bad ideas. And one of them there is, of course, universal four-year college education, free for all everything, all state universities, University of California, the whole thing that they're proposing, because if you don't have a four-year college degree, you're nothing. Garbage. Absolutely. And part of the reason I feel so strongly about that is I'm looking at my hands right now. They are kind of useless implements. The captivating Mrs. Campbell is listening to this, and she knows that if there is need to use a hammer or a screwdriver in our household, she does it, because these hands I'm looking at will mess that up. And so therefore, people who work with their hands, I have a tremendous amount of respect for, because they can do something that I can't even imagine how to do. And it just like if you took me and said, oh, you're no good unless you can work with tools, I would work with tools and I would fail. And then I would be a failure in life and blah, blah, blah. And so what the left is doing is they're taking people who are good at that kind of stuff. And this is another thing that's good about President Trump keeping those kind of jobs in America and Governor Ducey wanting to keep those kind of jobs in Arizona, is that if you're good at that stuff, you don't want society to say, oh, no, you have to be a radio talk show host, when maybe you're not good at that. And or you have to be a CPA, which I happen to was pretty good at, I think. Don't any of my clients, you all be quiet from decades ago. But they force you to do something that maybe you're not good at. All these jobs have wealth, they have worth, they have dignity. And what governor is saying is this state is going to give training and education for all those types of jobs for people so they can learn those trades, they can have a good job, they can have a great life here in Arizona. And hopefully we do that stuff here and we don't do it in China. Absolutely fabulous. Absolutely fabulous, I thought. I thought the State of the State was great then. Well, a couple other things he pointed out was, I'll just mention a few more things that he said. He said that in the 4 years he's been governor, we went from $1 billion deficit to $1 billion surplus. And you probably have seen the news that the state bought the Capitol building back. So the state once again owns the Capitol building, which during the Great Recession had been sold off. And this is actually going to save, I have that figure here somewhere, how much it's going to save I can't find it right now, but saves a certain amount in the budget per year by buying it back versus renting it, which was what was being done. He also said that he wants to establish a record-breaking $1 billion rainy day fund. Now, the total budget in Arizona is about $10 billion. So that is about a 10% rainy day fund. And that is good. And that would be record-breaking. In California, where they're trying to do rainy day funds, their goal is to get to 7%. So 10% is way better than that. But no one should think that that's a complete safety net. Having revenues drop by 10% in a year is not that unusual. It can happen in any kind of recession. So that rainy day fund, I know the Dems and the spenders are going to look at that and say, oh, we should be spending that, blah, 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 blah. That's too big. We don't need that. That could evaporate in a year if you have a bad year. So I applaud him again for doing that. Now, do I like every single thing Governor Ducey is doing? No, I don't. I don't agree with myself all the time. The captivating Mrs. Campbell listening to this probably didn't agree with something I'm saying in these 3 hours. But I tell you what, I think he's doing a great job as governor, and that was a good state of the state, and I hope a lot of that becomes law and not just rhetoric. You're listening to John Campbell filling in for Seth Leibson. Don't go away. Leibson Show. This is Congressman John Campbell filling in for Seth. And this segment, we're going to lighten it up just a bit. This is Scottsdale Car Week. Now, many of you may know of the Barrett Jackson car auction that goes on this week every year in Scottsdale, and that started it all. But there are actually 7 auctions. Now, full disclosure, I am a car collector and a car buff. I used to be a car dealer back in the 80s and 90s. And so I like cars, and I follow this stuff, and I know this stuff, and I will be going to 2 of the auctions this coming week and several of the other parties and drives and various things that I will be doing later this weekend, over the weekend. So I'm a part of this mix, but it is a big deal, and what is happening in Scottsdale is a big deal. The big car people worldwide say there are 4 major events: Amelia Island, Florida; Pebble Beach, California; Villa d'Este in Italy; and Scottsdale Car Week. So this is considered one of the 4 big collector car events in the world of the year. So it's a big deal. Just try and get a hotel room. You're probably not going to be able to get one. See what the traffic is like pretty soon. You'll see that. But to show you how big this collector car thing is now, I've got a thing here that says that the collector car market there were 1.2 billion in sales last year, and 2 individual lots that were 70 million of that total. So 2 cars accounted for 70 million of the 1.2 billion. I know what one of those was, but so it's a big deal. And then here they call it Scottsdale Car Week, but not everything's actually in Scottsdale. Last year, this week, this car week, over 10 days, 7 auctions, sold 3,200 cars for $252 million. So do the math on that. That means fully 20% of the entire car, collector car market sold at least at auction is going to happen here in Arizona this week. So that is a huge number of cars. I want to read you some of the auctions here, the 7 auctions, because I've got this guide from Sports Car Market that I get that explains what they are all. Silver Auctions, Arizona. And then it gives a little description of each auction. Silver Auctions, Arizona. Relaxed atmosphere off the beaten path. Barrett Jackson, the desert mega auction that started it all, rolls on. Worldwide, sports cars and more at the Scottsdale Auto Park. Bonhams, fine motor cars in an upscale venue. Russo and Steele, a return to Salt River Fields with top-notch cars. R.M. Sotheby's, world-class cars come to market at an historic hotel, which, by the way, is the Biltmore. Gooding & Company, important cars in a curated setting. So I happen to have in front of me the Gooding & Company catalog. I will be there on Friday. The auction there is Friday and Saturday. I will be there on Friday. And so I was flipping through this, looking at some of these cars, you know, and there's, let's see here, there's a few things here. Well, here's a 1979 Mercedes that's supposed to go for between $40,000 and $60,000. That's the very first lot. And actually, at some of the auctions, you'll see some cars go for $2,000, $3,000, stuff like that. So there are definitely things that are affordable. But I found this one that I think is right up producer Bill's alley. It is a 1958 Ferrari 250 GT Tour de France Berlinetta. And the range on this, producer Bill, this car is expected to go for between $5.8 million and $6.5 million on Friday. So I think I need to ask Jim get you that day off so you can get over there. I mean, perhaps this thing could go as cheap as 5.5. You never know.
I'll just reach into my wall safe, make change, and bing, bang, boom.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be good. I mean, I'm looking at this picture of this thing here. It's red and white, and I was going to say it has a radio. It actually doesn't. But, you know, well, that's bad. So wait a minute. Producer Bill, if you buy this car, you won't be able to listen to the show while you're driving it.
For $5.6 million, I should be able to listen to this show while I drive.
I think you should. So does that rule it out? I don't know. Wait a minute. But there's another one here. We're not done. There's another one later the same day. Here we go. Now, this is a 1950. This is a convertible. Okay. So this is Arizona. So, I mean, you know, you want the top to go down. Now, in the collector car world, they always say when the top goes down, the price goes up. And of course, it usually does. 1953 Ferrari 250 MM Spider Series 2. Spider, see, that means it's convertible. Series 2. This is $5.5 million to $6.5 million, so it starts lower. Maybe you could get this for $5.3 million or something.
Does it have 960 the Patriot on the radio?
Oh, wait a minute. Let's look and see here. This picture, there's the engine, carburetors. Here's a picture of somebody driving it in 1956. We know all the history of it here. We know all this. Where's the interior? There we are. No.
Mileage
Sorry.
May vary, yes. Okay.
Sorry, no 960. No 960 the Patriot. What can I find you here that here we go. This got to have a radio, a Mercedes Gullwing. That's got to have a radio in it. Yeah, that's got a radio, and you can get that for $1 million. You know, here we are. This got a radio. 900,000 to 1.2, 1957 Mercedes-Benz 300 SL Roadster. I got to tell you one story of being at this auction, actually not that long ago in Pebble Beach. There was a guy there who I knew, and he was buying one of these cars for which was going to be 1.2 million or 1.3 million, something like that. And he couldn't be there. And so he says, John, will you bid for me? And I said, okay. So he gives me his paddle and everything. He gives me these very strict instructions on how to do the bidding. All that, because he was actually going to be in an airplane. Because most of these things, they'll let you call in. They'll let you do it on the internet. They'll let you do anything you want because they have bidders from all over the world for expensive cars. And actually, for a lot of any of these cars, they have bidders from all over the world. So he said, bid for me. So I did. And so I did the thing, and I put it, and I won the car. I got the car. And so you can't believe it. All these people, nice car, John. Nice car. It was one something, one point something that it went for. And these people all thought I just bought. I knew a lot of people in the room, and they all thought I just bought a one point something million dollar car. Okay. Cool. Great. Yeah, I even got emails. Hey, John, heard you bought that Mercedes. And so I'd say, no, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. I didn't actually buy that car. I sort of did that car. Anyway, if you haven't, now, you know, not everybody here is interested in cars and all that, but I tell you what, it's a show. When you're in the room, and we have some friends from out of town, they're actually from Payson, they're coming down, and we're going to take them to all these auctions. They've never been. And when you're in the room when somebody bids on a $5 million, I've been in the room when somebody bid on a $20 million car, it's just electric. It's fascinating just to be there. And a lot of these auctions, you go in, you pay money, but you don't have to bid. You don't get a bidder's paddle. But it's just fun to be there. They're exciting. They're electric. They're interesting. And who knows? You might get the bug. Maybe this is a bug you want. Maybe it's a bug you don't want. But in any event, boy, it's a real big deal. Brings a whole lot of money into the Valley of the Sun here. So, that's my little car diversion for the day. By the way, I didn't say the number enough. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Connection with John Campbell here at the Patriot and the Seth Leibson Show. It's Congressman John Campbell. I will be back after the break. And guess what? We're going to get back into some political issues here I'm going to discuss vote harvesting. If you don't know what that is, you need to. Don't go away. Welcome back, Arizona. Congressman John Campbell filling in for Seth Leibson. Seth will be back with you tomorrow. Vote harvesting. I don't know if you've heard that term or not, but if you haven't, you will. And you should listen to what it is. California is the leader in vote harvesting, which means that it is a bad thing. Nancy Pelosi recently talked about some of the things California has done and that they need to be done on a federal basis. And to me, vote harvesting is the end of democracy. So let me explain. And the Democrats in the legislature in Arizona have already, several of them, the minority leader in both the House and the Senate, enlisting the things they would like to do here in Arizona. The beginnings of this vote harvesting they have proposed. So let me explain what sort of happened and what they do and what this means. Let me just back up, actually. What vote harvesting is that someone generally is paid and they go out and they collect ballots. And they collect ballots from homeless people. They collect ballots where there are illegal aliens that are around. They collect ballots wherever they can collect ballots. And then they fill them out and they turn them in mass and they vote and those votes go in and they count. And they make dramatic changes and effects in elections. Now, I paused because you probably are all sitting there going, what? Well, that doesn't make any sense. I'm supposed to vote my ballot, and I'm supposed to turn it in, or I'm supposed to vote in person. Somebody else is not supposed to vote for me. Here in Arizona, if I take in somebody else's ballot, it has to be a relative, and they have to tell me, they have to sign that it's okay for me to take it in, and then they have to sign it with their name on it, and so forth. Yes, that is the law here. But that is not the law in California, and the Democrats want that not to be the law here. And what they do, what their moral justification for this is, because I've talked to many of them about it, is how can you possibly in California this year, I've heard of one person turning in 700 ballots. I've heard of another situation where many ballots were turned in and they were only marked on one race, which was for Congress, because that's all the person who collected those ballots and harvested those ballots was paid to do. And to sit there and fill out all the other things on the ballot, he might mess up for whatever the person was paying him to do. So all he did was check the congressional race and turn that in. A whole lot of these ballots were turned in late. There were stories of people showing up at polling places, California posts on the outside who's voted, who hasn't. And you don't have to show an ID to vote in California. So, in fact, not only do you not have to show an ID, it is illegal to show an ID. Let me repeat that. Here in Arizona, you want to go vote, you show an ID. I am John Campbell. Here I am. If one of you listening, if I were still voting in California, went and said, I'm John Campbell, they have to and I hadn't voted, they have to take your ballot. Then let's say I go in and I say, I'm John Campbell. They say you've already voted. And I say, no. I'll pull out my ID. No. I can't see your ID. It's illegal to show an ID. No. But how else can I prove that's me? You can't do that. You just turn in a provisional ballot, which will get thrown away. And so somebody voted for me, and they got to vote for me, and I didn't get to vote. And all this is legal. California made it legal, first of all, motor voter. You don't have to be a citizen to get a driver's license. You don't have to show any ID at all. So you just say, I'm Joe Blow. I'm here. This is where I live. Driver's license, boom. Motor voter, that person automatically gets a mail ballot. So then they did that. So that basically meant illegal aliens and all kinds of other people get it. And then you eliminate IDs. Not only are they not required, but they're illegal to show them. And then you eliminate the requirement that the signature be matched on an absentee ballot. And then you eliminate the requirement that the person who's casting the ballot needs to turn in the absentee ballot. And you eliminate all those things. And guess what? You enable vote harvesting, which means people can go out and collect ballots from whoever and cast these votes. We don't know how much of this is done. But it would not surprise me if it was – it was certainly in the hundreds of thousands in California. It may have been more than that. And it – there's very little question that it changed all kinds of elections, because there were all kinds of elections where on election day they were 50-50. And then after that, it was 80-20 for the Democrats. Statistics tells you that can't possibly happen. And guess what? Nancy Pelosi – and the Democrats in the legislature want to bring this kind of voting to you in Arizona. It is the end of democracy, because it is no longer one person, one vote when this happens. I tell you what, I think the absentee ballot, mail-in absentee ballot, was a mistake. I think you ought to go in, show an ID, and vote as an individual. But this is becoming... It went so well for the Democrats in California. A little more after that, after the break, I'll tell you some of the things that they're planning to do. We can't let that happen. Arizona, it's Congressman John Campbell. Don't go away. Just listen to the music. I'm waiting to hear who's going to start singing here, Producer Bill. Or is this an instrumental? It's an instrumental? Okay. All right. Well, we're actually on air. I'm not just talking to you. Welcome back. It's Congressman John Campbell filling in for Seth Leibs, and Seth will be back with you tomorrow. Before the break, and by the way, 602-508-0960. That's the number. You can call and talk to me. I actually... we have time to talk a little bit now, but 602-508-0960 will reach Congressman John Campbell here in the studio. Okay, back to vote harvesting. So when I talk to Democrats about this, this thing where you don't have to be a citizen to get a driver's license, then driver's license automatically makes you register to vote. You don't have to show an ID to vote. Somebody can bring in 100,000 ballots and they collect them, and it's vote harvesting. Morally, how do they justify this, that they're not cheating? And their view is that they are giving voice to the voiceless. And you may not remember, but I remember this clearly. In 2014, Obama's last election, where he remained president after the election, and it was a bad election for the Democrats. And Obama came up the day after the election, and in part of his speech, he said, 50% of the eligible voting age people in America voted in this election. If the other 50%, that's true, okay, fine, 50, because only a certain number are register, and only a certain number of those vote. And so 50% of people of eligible voting age in America, he of course included illegal aliens, but and other non-citizens, but only 50% voted. And he said, if the other 50% voted, we would have won in a landslide. Well, this explains their psyche. Their view is that everybody that doesn't vote would vote for them, that these are the downtrodden, these are the underserved, this is the lesser parts of society and community, and that what they are doing when they do this vote harvesting is they are giving voice to the voiceless, that when they collect a bunch of homeless ballots or non-citizen ballots, or just ballots that I've heard stories of 60, 70, 80 people in California registered to vote to a single address, and where they collect these ballots and then vote them, that they are giving voice to the voiceless. And so that is their moral justification. My view on this is that that is no longer one person, one vote. The voice they're giving to the voiceless is the voice they're putting in those people. It's not those people's voice. It's the elitist voice, the coastal elitist voice put into those people because I'm a coastal elitist. I'm a liberal lefty. I know what's good for you, because that is what they think. And so they put that in it. We as conservatives would never do that. And we think it's fundamentally wrong. But to show you the problem, I mean, there's a whole lot of problems with the Republican Party in California, but amongst them is the fact that what do they do now? The Democrats are doing this vote harvesting. The unions are paying for it. And the Republicans have two choices. Either do it too, which is fundamentally antithetical to what Republicans believe, or they're just going to get crushed. They'll probably win another, never win another election. Now, trust me, the Democrats, there are 53 congressional seats in California. Democrats now hold 46 of them, 46 out of 53, which, by the way, makes one out of every five Democrats in Washington from California. So what those 20% of Democrats in California telling the rest of the Democrats is, hey, 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 Kristen Sinema, you need this in Arizona. You need to put this in Arizona, because if you do, the Republicans will never win another election, because we'll vote for all these people and all this stuff, and they'll never win another election. And by the way, this crept in. The legislature did one law at a time to creep this thing in California over about 6 years. But that's what they did. So this is something. Pay attention to this, folks. The sanctity of voting, as I say, in my opinion, even the mail-in ballot, which I do, I admit it, I do it. I haven't done it for very long, but I've done it for probably the last three or four elections. And I even think that this is, I think it was a mistake to do that. We need absentee ballots, or I'd rather have you vote in person and you have 3 weeks to vote. So if you're gone for a week or you're sick or whatever, you got plenty of time, that you've got a period of time to vote, but you go in and you vote in person, you show your ID and you vote in person. And I think that's the better way to do this. And so anyway, Arizona, this is something that's, you will lose democracy. We will lose this state if we let the Democrats put this kind of stuff in. So that was one thing I wanted to mention. Another thing I wanted to tell you about is a little Arizona experience I've had since I moved here last year. And I have my favorite little bar in Scottsdale that I go to, and the bartender knows me. His name's Leon. And I go there and I have margarita, and it's my kind of cheers, you know, my little cheers. So I'm there. This was, I don't know, a few months ago. And I sit down. And it's a chatty place. And like I say, the bartender knows me, comes up. He says, "Congressman, the usual." And I said, "Yes." And there are these two women next to me. And they turn over and they say, "Congressman?" And I say, "Well, I used to be. I was a congressman from Orange County, California, from California. Now I retired. I'm not in Congress anymore." And they said, "Republican or Democrat?" And I said, "Well, I'm," which people always do. And I said, "Well, I'm from Orange County. I'm a Republican." In about the next 60 to 90 seconds, they called me more names than you can imagine. You know, homophobe, Islamophobe, racist, bigot, all that stuff. And then they come to find out they're from California, duh, and from Northern California, and they had just moved here. And so they're ripping on me. Okay, but I've been in politics 14 years in full-time elected office. And I said, "All right, I know how to deal with these people. I know how to calm this down. I used every trick I know. You know, I understand why you say that. I can appreciate why you say that." And I blah, blah, blah. And this is the way I always, I had lots of angry constituents, people who I always said, if you're doing your, doesn't matter, if you're doing your job well, 30% of the people in your district will despise you, and that's just the way it is, and you have to accept that. If you don't like not being liked, don't run for office, because people are not going to like you if you do something. If you do nothing, you just sit there, I suppose you can make everybody like you. But anyway, so these people, that I tried everything. I got nowhere. They said, "Well, we're Jewish. Trump's eventually going to get rid of the Jews." I said, "Are you kidding me?" I said, "He has a Jewish son-in-law and grandchildren and all." And they said, "Oh, they're not really Jewish." I said, "Oh?" And they said, "Yes, we know who's Jewish and who's not. They're not Jewish. We're Jewish." Okay. You know, I was at a loss. I didn't know how to deal with it. I have to tell you, I was so angry. And for a while after that, by the way, I just left. And everybody else at the bar left. There was just two of them left there. Somebody left and said, "Go back to California." And everybody left. They didn't come there for that. They came there to watch sports and, you know, be at cheers. But I was angry for so long. But you know what? I decided that was the wrong response. I started being kind of like them. And I decided, you know, that was the wrong response. I made those people made me a less good person. And so now I'm not doing that. I'll keep trying those tricks. And if they don't work, maybe I leave, or maybe I say, "Huh, well, sorry you feel that way," and just go on. But one thing I don't think we ought to do is be like them. We certainly don't agree with them, but I don't think we should either be like them. And again, this is another topic I could wail on for a while, but you hear the music, and it's pretty good music. that Seth's picked for this particular song. So I'm going to let you hear that music, but don't you go away after the break, because it's rapid fire for the last segment here, Things You Need to Know. John Campbell filling in for Seth. Welcome back, America. Congressman John Campbell filling in for Seth. I got to take Kathy from Mesa. I'm still reaching over there to push the button. Kathy from Mesa, got to make it quick. This is a short segment.
Hi, John. Okay. Welcome to Arizona. I didn't know you were here, but great to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Right after the Sinema McSally election, when the votes were still being counted, I was at a post-election analysis event with Hugh Hewitt.
Yes.
And Martha McSally was a surprise guest, and the ballots were still being counted, and she said that her campaign had evidence that the Sinema campaign had done some ballot harvesting. Do you know anything about that or whatever happened with that or if there was any evidence of that? I was curious if you think that impacted the campaign.
I don't know. I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me at all. It is part of the Democrats' playbook now. And as I said, if you heard me before the break, they morally believe they're doing the right thing when they do it. So,
it's depressing, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. But you know what? I'll try and find out. And if Seth lends me, I'll either tell Seth so he can report on that, or if he lends me his microphone, I'll tell you then. Thanks so much for the call, Kathy.
Great. Thanks, John. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ah, I'm leaning over and doing that. Okay. What was I going to get to here? Oh, yeah. I got to make sure all right. So let's see. Here's some quick things. California's Governor Newsom is proposing a tax on drinking water. Isn't that fabulous? In order to provide, what do we want? Safe, assist communities, particularly disadvantaged communities, in paying for the short-term and long-term costs of obtaining access to safe and affordable drinking water. So they're going to tax water, fertilizer, and dairy. Wonderful. Isn't that fabulous? City of Phoenix is going to foot $150 million for the Suns' new arena. I got to tell you, I don't know the details of this, but I don't like this stuff. If you want to open a yogurt shop in Phoenix, the city is not going to give you any money. So why is it that people who own things that are worth hundreds of millions of dollars get subsidized by the cities? I don't know the details of it, but I am just fundamentally against that sort of thing. Gannett Publishing is apparently being sold. Now, why do we care? What do we? Because they own the Arizona Republic. And there's some kind of a hedge fund, Alden Global Capital, preparing to make an offer to purchase Gannett. The only reason I'm doing that is it possible that the Arizona Republic could actually print balanced news and reporting rather than just rip on Republicans and do that sort of stuff all day? I don't know. Maybe. But little bits of news on that. Again, Theresa May lost the vote 432 to 202. Your Netflix bill is going up from $11 to $13. Tell you what, Arizona, it has been great. Thank you, Seth, for lending me your microphone. And thank you, producer Bill, for all you've done in the clips and everything else. And I may not be the easiest person to do this stuff for. So he's saying all of the right motions in there, producer Bill is. But thank you, Salem. Thank you, the Patriot. I hope you all enjoyed the show. And so I will leave you listening to, actually, Seth's music is pretty good. He'll be back with you tomorrow. But also with my tagline, which whenever I was in Congress and is meant to say, freedom, but go for it, folks. Drive fast and live free. This is Congressman John Campbell signing off.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.